Translation: besides these inferior energies, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mine which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is explained that the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, constitute the gross energy of the Absolute Truth. And that there are also three subtle energies, namely the mind, intelligence, and false ego, or identification with the phenomenal world. Thus, the entire cosmic manifestation is divided into eight energies, all of which are inferior. As explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Mama Maya Dratyaya. The inferior energy known as Maya is so strong that although the living entity does not belong to it, due to the superior strength of the inferior energy, the living entity, Jiva Bhuta, forgets his real position and identifies with it. Krishna says distinctly that beyond the material energy, there's a superior energy known as the Jiva Bhuta, or living entities. When in contact with the material energy, this superior energy conducts all the activities of the entire phenomenal world. So we understand from this that our identification with this body in this world is just the false ego, one of the subtle energies. False ego is one of the eight inferior energies. There are three subtle energies: the false ego, the mind, and the intelligence. And there's five. There are five gross energies. So just to think that I'm doing something or I'm identifying somehow with this world is not a very high level of realization. Krishna's telling Arjuna that higher than this understanding is to understand the superior energy, the jiva, or the living entity, we forget about this superior energy, Prabhupada writes, because the inferior energy known as Maya is so strong. We don't belong to the inferior energy, but the living entity forgets his real position and identifies with it because the inferior energy is so strong. But the superior energy is beyond the inferior material energy. And to understand the superior energy, we can begin by understanding that it's in contact with this world and conducting all the activities of this world. So this is how things are going on in the world. People are in contact with the inferior energy, and they're doing so many, many things. Mataji, this is the third or fourth time you're leaving. You have to talk to him. Okay. And we'll see you back in a minute. Okay, I'm going to read the next paragraph. The supreme cause is Krishna. Janmadyasya yata. Here Prabhupada quotes the first verse of the Bhagavatam. Janmadyasya yata. Do you know that? Short part of the verse. Janmadyasya yata means who is behind the appearance of this world and the maintenance of this world and the dissolution of this world. Who is that? The Bhagavatam is identifying in the very first words of the first sloka that that supreme cause is Vasudeva. The supreme cause is Krishna, who is the origin of all energies. These energies work in various ways. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has both inferior and superior energies. And the difference between them is that the superior energy is factual, whereas the inferior energy is a reflection of the superior. So you might wonder, if it's factual, how come I don't see it? The spiritual is not readily visible to our eyes. But Srila Prabhupada explains how we can understand that it's there. The superior energy is factual, whereas the inferior energy is a reflection of the superior energy. A reflection of the sun in a mirror or on water appears to be the sun, but it is not. Similarly, the material world is but a reflection of the spiritual world. Although it appears to be factual, it is not. It is only a temporary reflection. Whereas the spiritual world is a factual reality, the material world with its gross and subtle forms is merely a reflection of the spiritual world. So again, Prabhupada mentions the inferior energy, which consists of the gross and the subtle elements. And he says it's just a reflection of the spiritual world. The reflection isn't real. He makes that point. No more than the reflection of the sun in a mirror is the real sun. So by negation, we're understanding what is the real world. By this example of what is not the real world. The reflection is not the real world. Similarly, this body is not the real self. But the real self is existing. Srila Prabhupada said it's like we have a relationship. It's like we have a relationship with Krishna. It's like the relationship of the hand to the body, or the ear to the body. The hand or the ear has a natural relationship with the body. So in the same way, the living entity has a natural relationship with Krishna, the supreme spiritual entity. He continues in the next paragraph. The living entity is not a product of the material energy. He is spiritual energy, but in contact with matter, he forgets his identity. Thus, the living entity identifies himself with matter and enthusiastically engages in temporary activities in the guises of a technologist, a scientist, a philosopher, and so on. The soul does not know that he is not at all a material product, but is spiritual. So he's in ignorance. His real identity thus being lost, he struggles very hard in the material world. Just like a person with amnesia, if he forgets his identity, he forgets who his family members are, what his occupation is, where he lives, he really has a struggle. So we're doing that. We're identifying with this world, forgetting where we really belong. So we're struggling very hard in the material world. Our real identity is lost. And the Hare Krishna movement, or Krishna consciousness movement, is trying to revive his original consciousness. His activities in manufacturing big skyscrapers are evidence of intelligence. But this kind of intelligence is not at all advanced. Actually, Prabhupada was living when the so-called advanced manufacturers were putting up the World Trade Center towers. And he was even then talking about it as not a symptom of intelligence. He said, now they're constructing two big towers, 100 stories, or how many stories, he asked, and somebody said 100 and whatever the number was, 108 or something. And Prabhupada questioned, why do they have to do that? You can live very comfortably just if you have a building with two or three stories. Why do you have to go all the way up 100, 105 stories? And these were the top quality buildings. At that time, the intelligence that was put into those buildings was just the top most intelligence in terms of engineering and manufacturing and architecture. This building was really, really good. So they were very proud. And Prabhupada was dismissing their so-called intelligence. Why they need such a big tower. And he said, even if you have 100, you can go farther, you can go unlimited stories, but what will you gain? So his activities in manufacturing big skyscrapers are evidence of intelligence, but this kind of intelligence is not at all advanced. The soul should know that his only real concern is how to get free from material contact. Why is that his only concern? Because by absorbing his mind in material activities, he takes temporary bodies again and again. And although he falsely claims to be very intelligent, in material consciousness, he is not at all intelligent. So as long as one is identifying with material consciousness, he's not at all intelligent, Prabhupada is saying. But he can falsely claim it. People claim, I'm very intelligent. But what's the result of your intelligence? Judge by the result. You take material bodies again and again. You identify with the body again and again, and material activities again and again, forgetting who you are again and again. When we speak about the Krishna consciousness movement, which is meant to make people intelligent, the conditioned living entity therefore misunderstands it because he's not very intelligent. He's so engrossed in the material concept of life that he does not think that there can be any activities that are actually based on intelligence beyond the construction of skyscrapers and big roads in the manufacture of cars. So he thinks that's all in all. Building big roads, building lots of cars. We see it every day. Every time we go out and drive, we see the cars. And then we see the trucks with the new cars. They're loaded up with 7 or 8 new cars. And we think, boy, maybe I'll get a new car. That would be really good. Why should I drive this old car? So our intelligence becomes absorbed. How can I get that new car? Well, let me just work a little more and then I'll get a plan from the bank and I'll buy a new car. And people think that's the advancement of civilization. This is proof of Mayaya Apritagana. Krishna says, Mayaya Apritagana. The knowledge is stolen by the inferior energy. The intelligence is lost due to the influence of Maya. When a living being is freed from such misconceptions, he's called liberated. Liberated. When one is actually liberated, he no longer identifies with the material world. The symptom of mukti, liberation, is that one engages in spiritual activities instead of falsely engaging in material activities. So transcendental loving devotional service is the spiritual activity of the spirit soul. Now Prabhupada mentions the Mayavadis because this is the section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya is explaining this to the Mayavadis, so he brings them back in. Mayavadi philosophers confuse such spiritual activity of devotional service with material activity. But the Bhagavad Gita confirms, chapter 14, verse 26, Mantrayo vyabhacharane bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati tyaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in the spiritual activities of unalloyed devotional service, avyabhicharani bhakti, is immediately elevated to the transcendental platform and he is to be considered Brahma-bhuta, which indicates that he's no longer in the material world, but in the spiritual world. So devotional service is enlightenment or awakening. When the living entity perfectly performs spiritual activities under the direction of the spiritual master, he becomes perfect in knowledge and understands that he is not God, but a servant of God, as explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jivera Svarup Hoy Krishnera Nityadas. The real identity of the living entity is that he is an eternal servant of the Supreme. As long as one does not come to this conclusion, he must be in ignorance. This is also confirmed by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita 7:19. Bahunam janmanam ante ganavam mam prapadyate samahatma sadulabha. This means after many births of struggling for existence and cultivating knowledge, when one comes to the point of real knowledge, he surrenders unto Krishna. Such an advanced Mahatma or great soul is very rarely to be seen. Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vidam. Thus, although the Mayavadi philosophers appear to be very much advanced in knowledge, they are not yet perfect. To come to the point of perfection, they must voluntarily surrender to Krishna. So this verse, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Ganamam Mam Prapadyate, means that at the end of many births, one who has knowledge offers oneself to me, realizing his realization is Vasudeva is everything. Such an exalted soul is very rarely found. This word Vasudev is used in this verse, the name of Krishna. It means the son of Vasudev, but it has other meanings. Vasu means the soul of the universe. And Deva means divinity. Or it can also mean sport or play. Thus the name for Krishna can mean the divine play of the soul of the universe. So in that sense, when the person says Vasudeva is everything, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, he's saying the divine play of the soul of the universe is everything. That's another way of understanding it. He's not just identifying Krishna by name, but by activity. He's recognizing that the soul of the universe has lilas, or play, or sport, and that is everything. Vasudev can also mean completely pure existence. And it is an abbreviation for a person who is beyond the primordial nature, beyond the prakriti, beyond the inferior material energy, someone who has realized the superior energy. And he's disentangled himself. He's not identifying with the activities of the world. He's not conducting the affairs of this world in the bodily identification of life. So he's beyond primordial nature. And the qualities of nature, the gunas, that arise from the primordial nature. Vasudev Sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. Krishna explains here that it is a very rare soul who can exclaim, who can make this exclamation, how the divinity is wonderfully omnipresent. Vasudeva is everything. Means he's everywhere also. This is what Krishna says, what Arjuna says about Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 11th chapter, when Krishna sees, When Krishna displays his universal form, Arjuna sees how Krishna is everything, how he pervades everything. So this is understood in the way that the Bhagavatam explains in the first verse, as we said, janmadyasya yatan, like the universe comes forth from Krishna, and it's absorbed again by Krishna. That's in the first verse of the Bhagavatam. It's also here in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in this section from which this verse we read comes, about the higher and the inferior natures. Krishna says that the earth, water, fire, air, space, mind, intelligence, and the false ego, the notion that I am acting, this is his inferior energy, his primordial nature, divided into eight. But this is not the higher nature. For there is another nature of mind, know it as higher, it consists of living beings, O mighty armed, by whom this universe becomes animated. So all the animation in this world, all the life in this world, that's coming from the living entities, the higher nature. This universe is the cosmic womb for living beings, right? The cosmic womb. Krishna's glance injects the living entities into the womb of the cosmos. And that's how they get identified with this world. They get material bodies, temporary bodies, in the cosmic womb. I am of the entire universe, the coming forth into being. And I am the going forth into the cosmic absorption. So at the beginning, the coming forth of the entire universe is Krishna. And at the end, the going forth into the cosmic absorption, when the universe is wound up, that's Krishna. We're assured here in the purport by Srila Prabhupada that devotional service is the activity that can awaken the living entity from ignorance. And this is also true about the holy name of Krishna. When Lord Chaitanya gets into the association of the Mayavadis, he's asked why he chants. Why doesn't he just study the Vedanta Sutra? And he gives a lot of enlivening instruction about the holy name. Why he chants, he explains that. Simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, one can obtain freedom from material existence. Indeed, simply by chanting Hare Krishna, one will be able to see the lotus feet of the Lord. So if we want to get free of the inferior energy, obtain freedom from material existence, that's samsara, then we chant. This will deliver us. We'll obtain mochana, deliverance from Krishna Nam. For spiritual progress in this age of Kali, there's no alternative. There is no alternative. There is no alternative to the holy name. The holy name, the holy name of the Lord. Hare Nama, Hare Nam, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Katiyan Yata. It is the nature of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra that anyone who chants it immediately develops his loving ecstasy for Krishna. So we come to the preliminary stage of our original love for God, which is bhava. Just by chanting Hare Krishna, we can develop ecstasy, this bhava. If we chant offenselessly, these are good verses to consider because this weekend is devoted to chanting the holy name, this 40-hour kirtan. Love of God, the fifth and the highest goal of life, makes the other four goals of life appear as insignificant as straw in the street. Those other four goals are religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, impersonal liberation. For a devotee who has actually developed bhava, the pleasure derived from dharma, artha, kama, and moksha appears like a drop in the presence of the sea. And the last verse I'll read. This is a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Narad Muni to Vasudeva. When a person is actually advanced and takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord, who is very dear to him, he is agitated and loudly chants the holy name. He also laughs, cries, becomes agitated, and chants just like a madman, not caring for outsiders. So we see this when the devotees sit and perform bhajan. Even the children, when they sit on Friday at the noon aartik, the children sit with the harmoniums. They bring three or four, sometimes five harmoniums. And they're all playing together. They're learning to chant in kirtan. So they chant loud. And they're thinking, like this, Krishna is very dear to me. And they loudly chant the holy name. They may laugh, they may cry, chanting just like madmen. And they don't care for outsiders. So this is also the condition of the devotees. Here you see, during the kirtans yesterday and today and tomorrow, there'll be so many devotees here chanting, not really caring what outsiders think. The outsiders may not understand. They're in ignorance of their spiritual identity, so they may not understand the spiritual activity of the devotees. Isn't it? Okay, any questions?